The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me once again this week, I'm afraid probably to talk about his planning application, it's James Baggett. James, how's your week?
Hello, John. Yeah, very good, thanks. How are you doing?
Great, but I'm fearful of the conversation that will follow.
Don't worry. Planning application is in now. They have asked me for a special drawing of my house, which I did with some crayons. They wanted to know where the boundaries were and how my electric vehicle charging point was going to affect my neighbours.
Oh, wow.
In no way, shape, or form. I mean, it is a lot of red tape. Interestingly, we had an email, didn't we, from a listener this week offering to help with said planning application. I have got some backup from a podcast listener just in case that's needed. But no, I've got BMW news as well. I know the other saga. The salesman came all the way down from BMW Park Lane yesterday. He turned up at my house at 6 o'clock and actually gave me a fantastic handover of my bike, which I wish I'd had on the day. He taught me lots of things I didn't actually know it did, which was exactly what a handover was for. But so I just wanted to say thank you very much to Brendan from BMW Park Lane for actually doing what I hoped they'd done in the first place, but actually in the comfort of my own home, which was very nice. But no, we've had a busy week this week, haven't we? We've been doing the shortlisting for the Used Car Awards.
Yes.
Which has basically given my eye a little bit of a twitch. That is a genuine problem. Probably come from looking at many, many spreadsheets. It is a bit of a headache, isn't it? But we think we've got there. And on Monday, the shortlist will be announced. We needed to make sure it was finished today because on Monday, I'll be flying to Tokyo in a plane for the Tokyo Motor Show.
As opposed to flying there in a boat.
Thanks, John. But yes, so I will be able to give you a big update on the Tokyo Motor Show on next week's podcast.
Oh, lovely. I look forward to that.
I'm very much looking forward to it. And guess who's taking me to Tokyo?
Toyota.
No, BMW. So that's going to be an awkward conversation, isn't it?
Okay. What are they unveiling then, BMW?
They are talking about their hydrogen technology.
Oh.
Yeah, which should be quite interesting. Other than that, I don't really know. Oh, no, I do know. They've got one of their new small SUVs, the X2, I think it is being revealed. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing some mad Japanese things because of the Tokyo Motor Show. They have that upstairs hall. Have you been before, John?
I have been before.
Yeah, they have that mad hall, don't they, upstairs, where they've just got all of the crazy things that that they've thought up. Because it's called a mobility show, not a car show.
That's right, yes. So and they also, when I went, it extended to outside, and they had an array of tiny Japanese motorhomes, which are hilarious. Really? You know, like kind of the sort of like your Bedford Bambi type get-up that you could park in a tiny, tiny space. And then a lot of other crazy things. Around the general area.
I'm looking forward to all of that. So I'll be able
I hope you're not too sleep deprived and you do get to enjoy it. So I look forward to your updates on that.
Thank you, John. Anyway, how's your week been?
My week has been fine. Yes, we've been very busy with the shortlist. So our judges have been busy doing lots of mystery shopping, haven't they? Mm. And then we get a nice big spreadsheet that we have to copy into all our usual places and words. Yeah. We really so that's the headache, is making sure we haven't misspelled anyone's name from the information that we've been given, which is not your forte, is it, James? We normally have
it's definitely not. No, but mystery shopping this year has been a little bit poor. I'm very sad.
Data did show that.
Yeah, has been disappointing. Talking to the teams that do it, they said there's been a marked difference to the last couple of years, where people were really obviously desperate to take these digital leads seriously. I don't know whether people are just not taking the business quite as seriously. I talked to some used car dealers and they say, oh, we're really quiet at the moment. And then you look at the response that we had from some of the mystery shopper this year and you can sort of see why. Mm. So, yeah, and the good guys were very, very good, yeah, as usual. But, yeah, some of the ones you would expect to do well did not do well this year.
Yes. Yeah, it tended to be. Well, actually, I won't give any more away.
No, let's not.
Find out.
The shortlist will be out Monday. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Well, on that note, I will introduce our guests, because we have two guests this week. It's Jamie Capel and Craig Vladimiros from Car Key. Welcome, both of you.
Hi.
Lovely to have you both. I can't reveal how well you've done or not done, but you'll find out on Monday. So it's all good.
True. Yeah, it's a really, really horrible way to introduce us, basically, to say the mystery shops were terrible. Some people who've done well before, you'd have expected to have done better, but welcome, guys.
Welcome to the podcast, yeah.
Tax weekend ahead.
Yeah.
Well, we'll say no more and stop talking about used car awards in case we accidentally reveal anything. So you two don't really need an introduction, but I'm going to make you do one anyway. Tell us, or tell the audience, a bit about Car Key for those who haven't heard of you, which I imagine there aren't many.
Shall I do the honours, Craig?
Go for it, mate.
Car Key is a small family-owned and ran car dealership based on the outskirts of Derby, established in 2017 with 10 cars. Still feel like a small family-owned business, even though we're now probably about a 250-car site, 25 staff, just selling a couple of thousand cars a year. Never really meant to be this, did it, Craig? It just kind of happened. And, yeah, we're plodding on. It's been a wild few years. Pandemic accelerated the growth of Car A Lot at Car Key.
Oh no, what are you doing?
Well, that is brilliant, because that was going to be my first question to you, is I was going to ask you about that previous business, and now you've brought it up, you give me the perfect opportunity. Oh, Jeff, because you've had a real successful couple of years, haven't you? But that previous business that you run and was had a big profile.
Yes.
Had a big profile. Didn't go as well as you'd hoped it had.
No.
You've started again. So yeah. What I'd like to know is what made you come back and do this all over again? What was the, why did you want to take punishment yet again?
For me, it was a case of I was going to lose everything. It's as simple as that. So it wasn't, it was a case of do or die a little bit. It was a case of I'd lose my house, my reputation. I felt I lost my reputation anyway a little bit, but I was going to lose everything. So it was a case of go again or just that's it. You'd probably never see me again. And that was that. I put myself, I suppose more importantly, my family, my loved ones in a terrible situation, and they were all on the verge. And I just, I'm good at selling cars. So I just said, I will deal us through this situation. I will sell us out of the problem that we're in. Have faith. It's what I'm good at. I'm a good car salesman. I don't necessarily think I'm a great businessman or whatever, but I can sell cars. And it was a case of having to do it or I'd lose everything. And unfortunately, I think I'm still in that frame of mind, which Craig tries to pull me away from. I have this fear ingrained inside me that I'm going to lose everything. And if I let go for a second, it's all going to come collapsing down and I'm going to be where I was back in 2016. So I probably could do with some therapy or something. Well, I don't know.
You speak to some business owners who have had those very difficult times in their business. And it refocuses them hugely and inspires them to really, really work hard. And I wonder whether that is the reason that your new business has been so successful, because you are constantly pushing yourself. But I'm not going to ask you that question. I'm going to ask Craig, because Craig knows you. He's been watching from watching you next to you, doing it all this time.
Well, this is it. And the thing for me, when Jamie started Car Key, I was looking from afar. I'd seen what he'd done with the old business. And it was impressive how quickly he built a business again from nothing to where it got to. And I just looked at what was happening and thought, do you know what? If he's building another business and he can do again what he'd already done, but eradicate perhaps a few mistakes that were made along the way, that's something I want to be part of and feel I can probably help help build as well, which is why I kind of left a pretty cushy number, plodding along, kind of just going with the flow. Probably could have been in my previous job for life type thing, but it's not what I wanted. I wanted a bit of excitement, wanted to test myself, and it's certainly been a test. Been a bit of a roller coaster to say the least, but we've done all right, and it's been exciting, it's been enjoyable, and certainly the best business decision I've made in my career so far. And yeah, given what he'd done before, I just thought he's going to do it again, and I want to be part of it.
Yeah.
And you've been, and I will just say this, it's not a back scratching reach around exercise, but a massive part of the success is because of what Craig's done. You know, Craig's a doer. You know, I'm an idea man, a creative, a salesman. I'm chaos. Craig is very measured, very, he could win the lottery or his dog died and he'll sound exactly the same. he's probably a bit more balanced than I am, but he's been massively instrumental in getting us to where we've got. And I'm extremely grateful for your work and your efforts, Craig. So well done. Should be very proud of what you've helped achieve here. Because he has. I will say that. He's done an amazing job.
Jamie, what lessons did you learn from that last business that you've taken this time that other people listening to this podcast can learn from too? What did you do when you started up Car Key differently?
So I didn't have a handle pretty much on the financial running of the business. I entrusted it and left it with somebody else. And so again, in many respects, I'm probably I'm responsible for the downfall of my other business, putting responsibility where that responsibility was perhaps abused in some respects. But here it was a case of, first thing was, never have a reason to be able to be criticized or approached by, I don't know, people to say that you're not helping people out. So fix everything. Just fix every car, even if it's not covered, even if they're out of warranty, if they're moaning, just get rid of it. Throw money at a problem until the problem goes away. But certainly with customers, that was the philosophy from day one, is just not cave, but just fine, to fix it, make it go away, fix it. So there was that. There was money, you know, not being frivolous with money, not taking big money out of the business, not running big cars. Even now, if I buy something a bit special, I'll feel guilt, as Craig will attest to, and then all I want to do is sell it, because I just think it's a waste of the company's money. Being a car, even though it's on the forecourt, if it's the equivalent to 7 or 8 cars, I just sit there and then feel guilty that I'm costing the business money, and not taking funding. I think, it's not to say that funding's a bad thing, but because financially I had to set this business up in my parents' name initially, when we got offered funding early on, I was ready to just take it. I was like, come on, let's take it. We can join the big leagues again and we can start stocking loads of stuff. And my parents had to sign the stocking and they were like, no, there's no way. And I'm like, no, come on, we get 50 grand. I can put it into 10 cars. I can flip them. We can do 1500 quid a car. You know, we might sell those cars over a month. We're into another 10, 12 grand. And they were like, no, just no. And at the time we were making money. And my mum said to me, just give it 4, 5, 6 months. And that money you'll make. Mm-hmm. And then you're not paying a 2 grand a month interest charge on it, Jamie. Just be patient. Wait. Obviously, I wanted everything, you know, then and now. But it was the best decision we've ever made, because If I look at our stock level now and imagine that, say, 60 or 70% of that was funded with what rates are and everything now, as we've come into a leaner month, and I never want to say it's quiet, but we've had a quieter month, but maybe that's down to the way we've been dealing with the mystery shops. I don't know. We'll find out Monday. But if we were now, I'm not going to say crippled, but we had that massive interest charges every month and cars falling off these schemes and these plans, it would be putting us under colossal amounts of pressure. So I think don't run before you can walk. Build up slowly. Don't try and take over the world on day one and you know, and also, gently. And
it's about having full control, isn't it? We have full control over the entire business, really. If we want to make a big business decision, it's made upon what's happening out there. We can react to things, and we're not held and tied by, like say, stocking and stuff like that, that may make us make decisions that we perhaps don't want to make, but we feel we have to in a certain situation. And we can adapt, we're nimble, we can do what we need to do to keep driving forward and staying on top of things.
Greg, what are you seeing in the market at the moment?
In terms of how busy it is, or?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, again, like Jamie said, this month for us has probably been the slowest month we've had since the opening of COVID. That said, we've just come off the back of two brilliant days, which has lifted spirits and made us think, oh, actually, yeah, maybe things aren't so bad. Mm-hmm. And it's not been a disastrous month, but it's just not been what we've been used to over the last period of time. I don't know, maybe it's coming back. But again, Jamie has is adjusted the stock pricing and stuff like that over the last few days to try and kickstart the month, albeit coming towards the end of it. And it's certainly had an instant effect. Maybe we could have reacted slightly quicker, perhaps. But again, as a business, we have been under pressure over the last few months in terms of keeping up. So in some respects, it has been quite nice having a slightly lesser flow, because we've gained in other areas of the business. We've been able to catch up on some prep and these kinds of things, and implement a few more processes and stuff that we've been wanting to do, but because we're kind of head down and charging forward, we've not been looking up and taking that time to do things to make us better. So we've hopefully made the most of it being a little bit quieter, We can move on a better foot, hopefully.
Jamie, we're due an update next week on used car prices from CapHPI. We do a monthly one, and I'm hearing that they are dropping quite drastically this month. What are you seeing on used car pricing front? I mean, Craig's just mentioned there you've had to adjust things.
Prices. So I was saying a month ago prices are going to keep going up, and prices haven't. And I've been slow to react to it. Like Craig says, we're so busy, we get wrapped up. We've obviously been on a trip recently, you know, and these things take our time up. And actually, looking at prices, yeah. So I use AutoTrader as the barometer of where stuff should be priced. And very usefully on their dealer portal, you can see how your car is priced, whether it's low, good, great, or high priced. Good, fair, and then high priced, and they're color coded. So you'd be looking at the stock, and then a few days later, greens are going to ambers, ambers are going to reds, which means your car is becoming more and more expensive. I've done a quite savage price exercise in the last, as Craig said, 48 hours. We took 19 orders in the last 2 days. You know, we've been having days where we've been doing ones, twos, and threes, which for me just makes me feel ill, and it shouldn't, but it just makes me feel ill, because I know how much the business costs to open, put that to one side, but I know how busy we should be and how we do the job well. So we've reacted, I've dropped loads of stuff, and typically we've had two really busy days. I think we'll have a busy day. I think we'll be busy now, but prices have moved quite quickly. Bizarrely, where I predominantly buy cars from, for the last, not last week, but the previous 4 weeks, prices seemed quite firm, and it's been a bit bizarre. And I think this is another reason why I've not reduced my prices so quickly, or our prices, because I've seen what cars were making in the sales. And I'm thinking, well, if they're making that, that doesn't correlate to prices coming down in the market. But whether that's just an anomaly that maybe that particular site I go to has picked up some new buyers and I'm not having the run of it again, which makes me a bit mardy because, you know, I like to buy cars cheaply because then we can put big margins across them and have a nice time. But the cars I've actually bought this last week have been cheap. Unfortunately, we've done a deal with a big auction group for independents to put the part exchanges into, which is great. Low fees under a banner is brilliant. And if anyone's listening to this, they want to reach out to me, get in touch, and I can link you in. But the cars that I've sent there, you know, which are trade-ins, typically as price, it's coupled with that. So we're seeing the stuff we're sending to auction now not achieving the figures that I'm fairly sure these cars would have been achieving a month and a half ago. So Auto Trader prices are down, cars are cheaper to buy, and cars that we're sending out to sales to sell are making less money than they were. So it's a bit of a reset, an adjustment, but we'll wash out of a stock and we'll replace it with cheap cars and we go again.
What do you think it is that's causing this, Jamie? Is it consumer confidence? Are we starting to see people's wallets really being hit and actually seeing them that come through to the used car market?
So myself and Craig have got friends who are in the mortgage industry and financial services and stuff, and certainly my friend who's in it has been saying for months that obviously house sales have gone down, rates have gone up, applications are at an all-time low. And you kind of sat there thinking, is that going to wash through to cars? And we've not really seen it. I popped on Instagram for the first week of September, which is only 6 weeks ago. We sold 14 cars in a day on a Saturday. And we were set to have the best September ever. September was flying until halfway through, and then it seemed to fall off for us. Lots of people I talk to say it's a bit tougher out there. I don't know. Can we be busy all the time? I want us to be, but maybe it's just one of those little dips. Maybe, I don't know, you can never really completely tell in this trade. One thing we are seeing a lot more of is that there are a lot more customers now looking to return cars, to back cars, to have an issue within 6 months, which means they've spoke to the finance company and you're going to have to buy this car back off me, or we've just decided we don't want the car now, or consumers are going straight to the finance companies when they've got a problem with the car. And it seems now that maybe it's coming home to roost, all the adverts. Did you buy finance from this company? You know, it's like the PPI claim culture really seems to be hitting us, and maybe people are struggling. Maybe people's mortgage payments have gone up. Maybe people's cost of living's got to a point where they're looking at the car and they're thinking, I'm doing 400 quid a month on the car plus fuel plus insurance. How can I get out? You know, and maybe not being entirely honest about ways of trying to then get out of the car and use the, you know, not everybody's like that. I sound like I'm being really negative when I say this. It just seems more complaints, calls, and attempts to reject and buy back and problems than we've ever had. I don't know what your thoughts are, Craig, if you're feeling that.
I was just going to touch on it, the amount of people cancelling as well. So they're committing to buy, they're depositing, we're getting the cars ready. And then in that period, they're calling up and they've had second thoughts, and all of a sudden somebody's died or they've lost their job that morning and things like this. And I'm wondering, perhaps, especially with the finance ones, is it, they're looking at their old car and they paid maybe £200 a month and it was 12 grand a couple of years ago. They're now looking at another 12 grand car and that £200 a month payment is probably 240, 250. They're looking at finances and thinking, hang on a minute, I'm getting the same kind of thing I had 2 years ago, but I'm going to have to pay 40, 50, 60 pounds a month more for it. Plus insurance has gone up, this, that, and the other, like Jamie's touched on, and they're thinking, do you know what, actually, maybe the sensible thing here is to not go ahead. So I think we're still perhaps getting the same amount of inquiries, and we're still initially dealing the same number of deals, but actually the ones that are completing, for us, we're seeing more drop off at the minute. We thought it was perhaps down to us and us not getting cars ready quick enough and things like that, and our communication with customers, and we're looking at ourselves, blaming ourselves for these things, but actually maybe looking a bit deeper into it. Maybe it is what's happening out there is affecting us more than we thought.
Yeah, I think that might probably be the case. But thank you both for your honesty on that front. And I'm sure there'll be many people listening that resonates with. John, shall we start our stories?
Yes, I think we better. I do also want to talk about Bangers of Ben, but we do have a story on the website about that. So
nice.
I'm sure we'll come to it. So if you haven't listened before, James and I have chosen our favourite stories from the car dealer website this week. We don't know what each other has chosen, and we're going to have a chat about each one as we go through. At the end, Jamie and Craig get to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. If you want to play along, you can X at Car Dealer Mag and let us know if you think we've missed anything. I won last week. I've checked. So I'm going to go first, and I'm going to get out of the way perhaps the beginning of the end of our Pendragon saga stories. So a very, very brief recap. I'm not going to go into various share prices and things, but there was a bit of a bidding war going on for Pendragon, wasn't there? We had Lithia Motors. Then we had, I might have got the order a bit wrong here, but then we had, I think, Hedin, I want to say, and what's it called? Penske, thank you. The coffee hasn't kicked in yet. Bidding, they pulled out of the bidding war, but AutoNation, another enormous American company, was still in. They have now announced, this was a few days ago, that they will not be increasing their previous offer. So they are effectively out of the running. So they have paved the way for Lithia to buy Pendragon, effectively, is how it's looking.
Parts of Pendragon.
My apologies. Is this deal not involving Pinewood? I can't understand the complications. Yes.
So the Lithia one is where they've made an offer for the car dealerships and the leasing business. They made the original offer, which was about $250 million. They've now upped that to $397 million for those two parts of the business. Pinewood, their DMS business, will then take Pendragon's place on the stock market. Bill Berman, current CEO of Pendragon, will remain with Pinewood and be the CEO of that Pinewood business. And Lithia and Pendragon will invest money into building that business up, which will remain on the stock market. So you're right. I think this one is probably going to go through now. They vote on it next Wednesday, shareholders. It only needs a 51% majority for it to get through. And I think the chances are that's probably going to happen. Now, the only sort of sticking point in this is Hedin. We don't know where they're going to
vote. They own the bulk of the shares currently, don't they?
28%, nearly 28% of the shares Hedin own. They've been big business for this business, and they, as you say, they've pulled out. So it'll be interesting to see what side of the coin they fall on. But I don't actually think it matters. Pendragon and Lithia have already got backing of around 30% of the shareholders for this deal. They need 20% more for it to get over the line. I think that's probably going to happen, which puts an end to this saga, doesn't it, really? But it has been certainly an interesting one to watch. And I think the most important thing about this is it's shown the hand of these other big American dealer groups that they are interested in expanding. I mean, the surprise to me was that Penske was interested in expanding. The fact that they teamed up with Hedin, that was a weird one for me. I wondered why it happened. Penske are easily big enough to make their own bid for Pendragon. I mean, if they combine Pendragon and Sytner in the UK, they would be by far and away enormous. They would be the biggest. But I don't think they would have got that deal through completely. I think they probably saw the issues with the manufacturers. I mean, Sytner and Pendragon have got very similar portfolios of brands, and there would have been some big issues getting the manufacturers to sign off on that. Whereas this deal at the moment, I think there's probably more likelihood of Lithia, who obviously are going to combine Pendragon with Jardine, which they already own. But I think they'll probably get more of a sign off there. But the other one is AutoNation. Where do they go next? They came out of the blue. They're the biggest American dealer group by some margin. And they clearly didn't want to let Penske and the bidders, Lithia, get run away with it and snap up everything in the UK. So Virtue is an absolute sitting duck, in my opinion, at the moment. I mean, there's been a lot of share activity there, and people expect that bid to come. So
they're not going to go home empty-handed, are they?
They're not. I think only a matter of time.
Why the interest, do you think, from these big American groups in the UK car market? What's happened?
Well, I think they look cheap, and I think even at the prices that they took Lookers out for, which is obviously another deal that's just been done, the amount of property that they owned, and you add in the property and the profit they were making, and actually they were getting that dealer group for a song. They really were. Right. And I think they probably are going to be doing the same with Pendragon. Pendragon hasn't got the same property portfolio, but they have got some amazing brands. And actually, at the heart of it, they can be. There is a profitable business to be had there. I think they can probably improve it. And it is these American businesses make huge amounts of money. They are absolutely massive, and there's only so far that they can expand on their home territory.
Yeah.
So they're looking to the UK. You know, they speak English, sort of. We speak English. Yeah. What do you think will happen to Virtue? Do you think they'll end up in somebody else's hands?
I don't know if you're talking to me there.
But no. asking you, Jamie. I'm pretty sure you guess what John would say.
I think potentially it's a very good, robust business, I think, Virtue. I was there in the early days, so I helped lay those foundations, you know, for Virtue's sales manager at Derby Citroen. If somebody came to me today without knowing stock prices, profitability, and said, you've got to invest a chunk of money in a big main dealer group, who would you put your money in? I'd go straight to Virtue. I would, just because dealt with Robert, again, very talented man, money man. It came off the back of Vardy's, which again was a very respect, which I worked for at the time. The Vardy values, you had your little Vardy V on your top, and you know, the business was run very well, wasn't extravagant, and they knew how to make profit. So I think if companies are circling to find dealer groups to buy, I would say Virtue would be a safe bet. Absolutely. Good bunch of people, as far as I remember.
Yeah, I'm sure it's only a matter of time. John, shall I move us on?
Please do.
From Pendragon saga to my story I'm going to pick first is the news on the annual accounts from MG, the Chinese-owned car maker, that clocked up profits last year of £54 million. And they said they did that in their annual accounts thanks to basically getting rid of some loss-making car dealers. They've been a huge success story in the UK, MG. These accounts show that they managed to double their previous year's sales to just over 1 billion in the UK. That was thanks to some new models like the MG4. MG5 was introduced, an update to it. And the MG4 has been a big success with retail electric car buyers. But the reason I picked this story is just it's interesting to see the change in the landscape. I mean, MG have got 153 dealers in the UK now. They've invested in dealerships. They've invested in the same sort of network that's worked successfully for people in the past. And they've told us, haven't they, on a Car Dealer Live and similar, that they're not going down the agency route. And they say they're definitely not going to do that with their mainstream models, but might do it with their Cyberster, which is a little bit of a contradiction there, but we'll see what happens. But those profit numbers have surged over 1,000% up from in 2021, 4.2 million to £54 million, which I think is just an incredible performance. And largely thanks to a really, really good dealer network. They said they've got rid of some of these loss-making ones, and they've optimized it, they say, in their words, with less partners, but with some bigger businesses. I mean, we've seen Virtue have taken on some, haven't we? I'm pretty sure some of the other big PLCs have got them too. And you've now seen them move away from these smaller dealerships into big corporate hands who seem to know how to really, really make money from this brand. But I just thought these documents really did show quite how successful this brand has been in the UK and how they're ones to watch. Be interesting to see what this means for the next band of Chinese firms come to the UK.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think there's two interesting things to take away here. One is that what this shows Chinese brands can do. Obviously, MG is a slightly unique thing unto itself because you can say, oh, they've got the heritage and so on. I don't think the heritage necessarily helps them that much because I think MG died out long enough ago that most people buying MGs now don't really buy it because it's an MG. I think there's an understanding that it's not the same thing. But also, it's interesting to see, you know, the cull of their certain dealers. I mean, I know a bit of dealer turnover is normal in any business, but this is following a trajectory that you see from manufacturers that start off as the minnows and then have to make, let's call them, some difficult decisions as you go on. And you start losing perhaps the businesses that helped you get going in the first place. Obviously, I can't speak to, I don't know what these dealers are that were bumped off the list. We haven't seen their, you know, how much money they were making, etc. But it's interesting to see MG do that, where MG was once, not that long ago, coming along and mopping up dealers that were chucked out by other manufacturers, for slightly nicer words.
Yeah. Craig, have you sold any MGs at Car Keep?
Do you know what? I think we've maybe had two in about the last year and a half. We've not had any electric yet, that's for sure. But yeah, just touching on that, like you say, it seems like they came along and they were just getting the foot in anyone who would take them, almost anyone who wanted a badge above the door to give them some bit of credibility. And then once them badges went up, it seems now, like you say, they're moving from those guys to the more well-known, bigger groups. And it's obviously in the numbers, it's proven it's taken off. My sister's got one, and they brought that because she said it looked like a GLA and it was better value. So yeah, but no, we've not really not had many. Need to speak to our buyer.
I
think that certainly these new EVs, if you're not, you guys see it all the time, you see new cars, as even people in the industry like us, all these new style EV cars are all just kind of rolling into one. And the thing is like you say, an MG 15 years ago, when we were selling conventional cars, a bit of a stigma, it was always an MG. But now, I don't know, it seems like that's kind of gone. And if you took the badges off a new MG EV, a Kia, a Hyundai, a Ford, all of them lined up, for someone who's not really that clued up, you'd be quite pressed to actually sit there and say that's definitively one of those. And I think that works well for a brand such as MG that maybe hasn't got the most prestige behind its brand, or now they just look like funky new electric cars with, I don't know, maybe that's just me. But fair play to them for doing it.
The other thing I think their brand positioning is almost a bit like, well, they've come along at a very good time, not a good time for the economy, but a good time for MG to capitalize on that, because I sort of think they're like the Aldi of car companies at the minute, aren't they? Like it's budget, but ultimately people aren't ashamed to say they shop there, because we're in that period of time where people are watching their budgets, and it's not a shameful thing to say. Not like it was in the 90s, say, where people were very keeping up with the Joneses. People are happy to be seen as making slightly more prudent decisions, I think.
People brag about a bargain now, don't they?
Exactly. I know I do.
Two people buy an electric car and they've both got 300 miles range, and they both charge at a certain rate from home, but one's 10 grand cheaper. The guy who's brought it 10 grand cheaper will be saying, well, my electric car does what yours does, but it was 10 grand cheaper.
Yeah, exactly.
Got one over.
And in the case of an MG, it's just as nice inside as a German ride, I think, now.
Maybe you should send him that tagline, John. MG, the Audi of the car world.
Yeah. If they start using that, I'm suing.
Right, over to you.
Okay, I will stick with electric cars. I've got a bit of a niche story, but it's talking about a wider subject. So I'm going to talk about, there was a fire at a JLR dealership in Preston earlier this year. I think it was in April. And they have now come out and said, Inchcape have come out and publicly said, this was not to do with an electric car. An electric car did not start this fire in our nice, shiny new JLR dealership. So they've blamed a non-vehicular electrical fault at the premises, which is quite normal. You know, electrical fires start building fires all the time. But the reason I bring this up is because I want to talk about the weird tide of anti-EV, oh, they all catch on fire kind of stories that we seem to suddenly be dealing with in the press. So, I mean, everyone will have seen the fire at Luton Airport car park, which I think initially a lot of conclusions were jumped to that it was an electric car. It wasn't. It was a diesel old Range Rover Sport, wasn't it? And there was a lot on, particularly on social media, there were a lot of armchair experts, should we say, sitting back and trying desperately to prove that this was some sort of hybrid Range Rover Sport. And the reason it caught fire was because there was a lithium-ion battery, and people looking at the way the flames were coming out the side and going, that's not how diesels burn. Diesels burn in a much different way, and all this, that, and the other. We seem to, it's a massive issue at the minute to do with, and I think it's not so much a fire-related thing. I think people are desperate to pick on EVs at the moment.
They are, yeah. I think it's, the issue is, I don't think people like being told what they have to do, especially the British public. And when they're told they have to buy an electric car, everybody was like, well, I don't want to buy an electric car, but it was going to be mandated. And the government have obviously noticed this, changed the rules slightly. But the problem is the mainstream press have jumped on this bandwagon of this public feeling of people not liking electric cars in general, or at least thinking that people don't like them. So they find these EV bashing stories as much as they can. I mean, I've seen some examples on some national newspaper websites where they've taken words from an electric car review, and they've just, it's a balanced review, and it's obviously the journalist has given the good points and the bad points, but the story they've published is, here's five reasons why this motoring journalist hates this electric car. I mean, it's just, if anything shows you that there is a slight agenda there and that they're looking for these stories, it's that.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, this is the problem. I noticed that too, John. And I think the problem is it's all being stirred up by the likes of the Daily Mail, who for some reason hate these EVs and are just stirring the pot even further.
Well, I don't think they care either way, to be brutally honest. I think they just, it's a case of which way is the wind blowing, and let's follow that. That's the thing. I mean, that example that you gave there, the review, I think the things they managed to pick out this journalist didn't like about it was something like the glove box is a bit small, or something like that. So it was an enormous blowout headline of, I hate this new BYD seal, whatever it was. And it was just like, oh, the button for the stereo is a bit sticky, or something like that. Such a minor thing. I mean, what about you guys? How are you finding the EV thing? Do you deal in EVs much? Do you find customers are a bit...
Craig loves EVs. Craig wanted us to become a dedicated EV dealership once upon a time.
Well, we have a category for that in our awards. I don't know if you're aware.
Wanted us to transition.
Yeah. It all got a bit messy. I don't know. We've not got any EVs at the minute. Honestly, we sold a Leaf about a month and a half ago. She's just emailed saying, I'm only getting this amount of range. Nissan quote this. What can you do? What are you going to do? You know, she didn't use the word missold, but we've sold some Outlanders with part battery bits. Customer bought an Outlander, took it to Mitsubishi, 7 years old and 110,000 miles. They've said the battery's operating at 69% efficiency. So he's backed the car because he's not getting the range he felt he'd get. We've got another one that's just prone at the back with a problem. We've got an RX, which we've sold, that somebody spiked the battery high. And you have a run of them, and it just really makes you think, oh, why bother? Why do we even bother? You know, but it is the future, isn't it, Craig? And it's going to go that way. But I'm not buying any, am I? Let's be honest. I'm not buying anything.
To be fair, though, I think with us, we sell a certain stock profile, don't we? And EVs, other than, that, like you say, the early Leafs and a few bits and bobs, most of the EVs, they've not dropped age-wise into our stock profile yet. I'm sure in the next couple of years, 18 months or whatever, as they will drop into the kind of cars we start buying. And I don't think we buy them because they're electric. We just don't buy them because they're not, the majority of the ones aren't, don't meet our stock profile.
Yeah.
Whether it be an ICE car or an electric car, you do the buying, when you look at a car, I don't think you discriminate against either. It's just, what is it? How old is it? How much money can I make out of it? And if it's an opportunity, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
And at the minute, they're not falling into our stock profile. No.
We're our sweet spot's kind of like 9 to 12, 13 grand retail. And at that, we certainly want a substantial margin. So we're buying cars between, for trade money, kind of 6 to 9, 10 grand. You know, so I think Craig's quite right when he says that a lot of these newer EVs are probably not falling into that type of price point yet. We did buy a Tesla Model S about 4 months ago for $8,000, believe it or not.
Oh.
$8,000. I shouldn't say that because I'm going to try and put it on a trade site later and sell it to one of them. But it's just
$18,000, you say? $18,000,
yeah. Right. But it's done 160,000 miles. So, but there is a chance it's potentially had a new battery, but it's one of those projects. Typically we bought and then we've parked it up and done nothing with it. Mm. We were going to do a little YouTube video, weren't we? Like, yeah. We bought Model S for less than 10 grand, you know, let's see what we can do with it. And
then thought better of it.
And then just remembered that we're trying to run a business selling hundreds of cars every month with, you know, extremely demanding customers and staff who need direction, you know, and you have all these great ideas and then, like Craig has said, whilst it's been slower for the last couple of weeks, it has enabled us to just start putting a bit more process in and prep stuff, because there's never enough time for us to do anything. But we'll sell EVs, won't we? We're gonna have to. Otherwise, we're not gonna have a business, are we?
I mean, you have highlighted an interesting point there, which is as EVs and PHEVs reach the sort of 10-year-old mark. I think there's a lack of understanding from consumers that they're not getting a brand new car and what that means in terms of an EV or a PHEV, you know, because a 10-year-old Honda Jazz or something still does 400 miles to a tank, doesn't it? Like it did when it was new. It's just a bit rapid. So on. Yeah. But that hasn't trickled down into quite the public understanding yet. Is it?
And I think there's almost that fear there with older EVs that EVs have a lifespan. The battery is going to die. If I buy it with 80, 90,000 miles on, is that going to last me another? Is it going to last a year? Is it going to last 2 years, 3 years? Still spending £10,000-ish on this car. How long is it actually going to last? Because if I spent £10,000 on a diesel car, I know I've probably got at least another 50, 60,000 miles in it. Am I going to get that out of this electric car? And it's probably the same for us because, like Jamie said, the last two or three we've had, they're not performing as they did when they were new, obviously. And so then that puts us in a tricky situation because we know that selling them, it isn't going to perform as it did, but the consumer is expecting it to. So what do we do now? Do we take them back? Do we say, no, it's not got a fault because it's working as you would expect it to do for that age? It's a bit of a tricky gray area, really, as to is there actually anything wrong with it or not? Or is it just subject to its age and deterioration that happens with an electric car.
And you just said something there as well. It's like a 10 grand investment. And we have to remember that a £10,000 car in 2023 is the equivalent to a £6,500 car in 2020. Yeah. So I often hear customers say, I've spent £10,000 on this car, this 10,000, which is a tremendously large sum of money. Yeah. But if you look at what 10 grand buys you now versus what it bought you three and a half years ago, it's different. It's like when you have friends ring you, have you got any £500 cheapies for me? They don't exist anymore. A £500 cheap is now £1,000 or £1,500. So as prices have gone up, expectations, I think, as well, have remained the same, haven't they? I'm spending 10 grand. So 10 grand should get me a reliability and a performance of what 10 grand bought me 3 or 4 years ago. And it doesn't. It's almost doubled. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit there.
Well, you're quite right, yeah. Particularly at the lower end of the market, I think this is definitely... Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll carry on. I mean, again, I know prices have dipped now, but you're looking into the future with supply and as manufacturers have got to make more electric cars and then all the missing cars from the last 3 years, are older cars going to just become more and more and more expensive? And with it, that unrealistic expectation of what someone's going to get for what they're spending, making our lives a bit more difficult, I suppose.
But
we'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights. Can we leave EVs for now?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do that. And I'm going to move on to a story that we picked up this week about a used car dealer. It's like a typical local newspaper story, this one. I absolutely love it. It's a used car dealer who has slammed, I haven't used that since I did work in local newspapers, his local council for installing speed cameras outside his showroom instead of fixing the flooding, which I just think is... I feel this guy's pain. This is Lancashire auto boss David Maher, whose business is based in Ormskirk. And his workshops, he said, has been flooded constantly. His customer cars have been swamped due to these major drainage issues, he calls them, on the road outside his showroom. He's moaned about this many times to his local council. But instead of fixing the drains, what they've decided to do is install speed cameras and traffic light cameras on exactly the road right outside his showroom where it floods over the next 6 weeks, rather than fix the drains. So understandably, this chap is rather annoyed. And it's one of those stories that has obviously gone very well on our website, because people don't like speed cameras. They don't really like councils. They definitely don't like flooding. And they felt this guy's pain. But I picked this story, John, because I just thought it took me back to my days of covering local newspaper stories, going to parish council meetings where people were arguing over fences and the cats up tree story. And it was nice to get back to.
Well, to be fair, James, you still go to those sorts of meetings, but you're now standing up and yelling. So it's a strange
talking about EV charging points at my
house.
That's
right. Yeah. I will say I do feel for this gentleman with his flooding in the workshops, because that is not great, and the fact that he's been complaining about it for quite a while now and nothing has been resolved, that is not good. However, I do have to point out, I don't think the drains department of the council, if that is a thing, is necessarily linked to the speed camera department of the council. So I don't think it was funds redirected from one bit to another. I think this is an issue where the council has a lot of people working for it, and one bit is just not really fixing the problem.
I mean, someone summed it up on Twitter. I refuse to call it X. And they said, drains don't make councils money, but speed cameras do. So obviously they were going to do that.
Maybe they'll catch some speedboats.
Sorry?
Maybe they'll catch some speedboats going
through. Oh, dear. Well, that's my story, John. Back to you.
Oh, okay, right. We're running out of time, aren't we? I'm gonna go to Bangor Sir Ben. So Bangor Sir Ben this year, I mean, I'm not really the best placed person to talk about this because I wasn't there and two people in the room were. But Bangor Sir Ben everyone's made it home after a loop of Ireland in their amazing creations. So 42 cars entered this year. Huge amount of money has been raised already, a lot of it by two people on this particular podcast.
Yeah.
So tell us how much you've made.
At the minute, we're just shy of 12 grand, but
that is incredible.
Commitments for Alex, if he's listening to this, owes us 400 quid. Someone else owes us 200 quid. There's someone 100 quid. I think with all that in, we'll do 12 and a half grand, which is what we set ourselves as a target. And you know, that was, everyone was really generous, which was nice. And you, I don't know, we just take it for granted a little bit, but it actually is a really large sum of money, isn't it? 12,500 yeah, quid. It's
absolutely,
And then the car's not sold yet. I say the car, Craig, sorry, what is it?
It's a mobile wrestling ring.
Well, there's a lot of call for those, so I imagine that'll do well.
We're expecting it to do big money.
Yeah, we hope it does. But fantastic trip. I think I think at times, on a personal level, you know, I found the job tough this year, guys, at times. I really have. We're doing well. And I have to keep reminding myself, we are, and again, with Craig's stewardship, should I say, we're becoming more profitable as a business year on year. But I found the first 6 months of this year really tough. And obviously, things have happened. Some high-profile people in the industry have passed, and then you're on the trip and you're talking to the people from Ben, and they sent out some stats about how many calls they took during the trip, how many food parcels they sent out, how much emergency money they'd help, and actually how they were helping somebody who, while we were away, took their own life, you know, while we're on the trip. And you actually start to think, because it's all well and good, you go on a crack, you have the crack, you go on your drive and everything, but you're doing it for a reason, and they offer help, and it's we're quite proud, aren't we, Craig? Because actually, we do our bit, and you know, there is a cost to the business. People don't see this because, you know, yeah, you buy your car, you pay for your ticket, but certainly for us, as pivotal as we are in our business, by the time you've done the car up, you bought your outfits, and you've done it properly, and you've got involved, and you've done some sponsorship as well, it can cost your business a significant sum of money, but it's the easiest, most justifiable bit of money we spend, I would say, as we do every year. And as I say, I've not had to ring Ben yet. Hopefully I never will, you know, but it's comforting to know that when people are on their arse, say to you, sorry to use that term, that they can pick the phone up and someone will help them out. You know, so.
No, it's definitely. Yeah. It's been a lot. It's a long time. When I look back at Banks for Ben, we started that project. I think it was in 2010. It was it was myself and a couple of mates who just wanted to get away for the weekend, and we decided at the time just to go out and buy some bangs. They were £250 is the budget for each of the car, and I got a Mondeo ST220 for £250.
Nice.
Which yeah. I have no idea how I managed that. And we decided to drive them from Gosport to John O'Groats and back again. And it was like one of those, when we decided to set off, there was like the front page headlines on the Sun were, do not travel, huge snowstorm coming. There was this, you know, apocalypse was seemingly upon us. Anyway, we decided to go anyway. And we drove up there and we just had such an amazing time. It took us a couple of days. There was one night we spent in Newcastle, where we stayed at a Best Western, where there was this huge family wedding that which we gate crashed. And I just remember, like, we were by the end of the night, we were dancing with the bride and groom on the dance floor of this wedding. We didn't even know these people. But at the end of the day, we came back, we sold those cars, we made a few £1,000 for Ben, and we thought, actually, this is a good idea. Let's make this into something a bit bigger. And then to see, God knows how many years later, I'm terrible at maths, I can't work that out. But to see you guys raise £12,500, just one team for Ben, is absolutely incredible. And it's nice to see that sort of the idea of mates going away in old cars and having some fun and then selling them in the end still goes strong all those years later, and is raising money for Ben.
It was what I particularly liked this year was you had the volume of teams again. You know, the last couple of years has been smaller team numbers, I think, because of COVID and what have you. But this year, it felt like old school bangers a bit, didn't it, Craig? Where everywhere you were driving, teams three behind you. When there's been like 20 teams, it's been lovely. It's been more intimate. So you maybe got to know everyone a little bit better. But this year really was just everywhere you looked. Banger, just and it's part of the fun of the trip, you know.
And you made a very important point about Ben, and it is a charity that is incredibly close to our heart, and at this year's Used Car Awards, we will be holding our charity auction in aid of Ben, and this time it will be in the memory of Dan Kirby, you know, a colleague that we've lost very sadly this year. We're going to be raising money for Ben in his honour. We've already getting some prizes coming in. So if anybody's listening to this who would like to send a charity raffle prize to be handed out on the night to raise money for Ben, please get in touch with the car dealer team because we'd love to take it. But yeah, that will be happening at the event on the November 27th.
Done. This job's tough at times. It is, you know, especially for Like ourselves, you know, me and Craig, it's you feel like at times you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders. And actually, you have to remember, we're selling cars, man. Yeah. Just selling cars, but you've got people's livelihoods relying on you. You've got, you know, reputationally, and I think as men especially, we're very proud, aren't we? Too proud to talk at times and things like that. And you know, it's, as I say, this job, especially when it's challenging, can be hard. So, yeah, Ben, great organisation. And if anyone struggles, just pick the phone up and chat, man, talking about stuff. Even if it's not to Ben, ring me. You know, I'll try and give you, I'll probably drag you down at the minute because we're not selling enough cars. You'll probably be worse. But no, just reach out. If you ever feel like it's too much, just pick the phone up, man. Talk to somebody, anybody, Ben. Me, Craig, you guys, definitely. Bring the car dealer officers, man.
Yeah, definitely. Right, I'm going to wedge one last story in, John, if that's okay, and I'll make sure it's quick, but this was a story that I posted on the website this morning, which I just absolutely loved, and it's about a time warp car dealership that has been found by some YouTubers in Germany that has been shut down since the mid-1980s. It was a Ford dealership at the time with a huge amount of stock, which they sold off, but they actually didn't manage to sell all of them. And rather than just shut this showroom down completely, they pushed these cars in, the unregistered Fords, into the showroom, shut the doors, locked it up, and have left it as a memorial to the owner, who sadly died in 1994. And since then, all these cars are still there. But there's an amazing YouTube video from a team called Auto Retro, which you can find on our website. We'll put it at the top of the story. But it's just great to see these cars in the showroom as they would have been. There's three Sierras, including an amazing estate, a Fiesta S Mark II, which brought back memories of one of my first cars, Escort 1.1 Laser, and my absolute favourite was the Ford Orion 1.6D, which I just thought was, they've managed to do some zooming in of the inside of these classic cars, which are absolutely immaculate, as you can imagine, not being outside in all this time. But the thing that made me think about this one is I wonder how much those cars are worth now. You've seen some classic Fords going for silly money, haven't you? So someone needs to go over there, Jamie, and make them a silly offer and bring them all back.
Craig's did a bit of urbexing, didn't you? Urban exploring. You go into old buildings and stuff.
I went with a friend once, yeah.
One of the team, Andy, he likes his old cars. He's got a Y-Reg Fiesta, an old Y-Reg Fiesta, nice. And he's an urban explorer. We'll send him.
Do that, and you can do a special report for car dealer.
Nice.
Yes, but that's my last story. But if you want to go and see the video, which is well worth watching, it's on the Car Dealer Magazine website.
Yeah, it's a funny one, that, isn't it? Because they're all immaculate, and the tires obviously been pumped up and so on. I mean, all I can say is it's a good job James Batchelor isn't here, because most of these cars are beige, and he would not be able to talk. He'd be that excited by them, I think.
Yeah. I wonder if he could match his trousers to those. Probably.
Inevitably. So, if that's all our stories, Jamie and Craig, before, I don't know how this is going to work, who's going to have the deciding vote here, but before we ask your verdict, are there any stories we've missed this week?
Yeah, I think we came off EVs. I wanted to touch on it, but I thought you would have talked about it, but you didn't. But Tesla announcing that their new facelifted Model 3 is 39,995 with a couple of new jazzy colours as well. That is a game changer. Surely that just is almost makes the Model 3. What was the, didn't they call the people, the Beetle, the people's car, like whatever, yes. or years ago. To me, at 39,995, why would you buy any other EV? I just see that they've maybe thought, right, now's the time to strike. We're just gonna change the game.
And the other good news is if they keep cutting the price in the way that they have been, by 2030 it'll be free. So to look forward to.
But I'd have no need to buy a car, and I seriously sat there and thought, I'm gonna buy one. I'm gonna buy one and have one delivered at 39,995, a brand new, but I won't because we don't need to. We've got a forecourt full of cars, but what a
I know somebody else who nearly gave into temptation of a Model 3 not that long ago.
Yeah, didn't go to plan. But you do. You wonder what this is going to do to used car prices again, because every time they do this, it knocks the price of the used Teslas in the market down, and at the same time, that brings everything else down even further, because everybody benchmarks their cars to a Model 3, because the customer goes, well, I could actually have a Tesla for that. I mean, we've even in this story we've said that at $39,995, that's just £1,700 more expensive than the top level Vauxhall Corsa electric.
And isn't it the same price as a fairly entry level Astra electric?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you see price cuts across the board, don't you, as a result? Some of it comes down to leanness in manufacturing. I think it was Ford Mustang Mach-E. They've dropped $7,000 off, have they, or something like that?
Yes.
Enormous drop, which is great for, well, we say it's great for consumers, but is it great for consumers? Because it's not great for the people who currently own a Mustang Mach-E, for example, and everyone else trying to deal with, you know, it throws the finance situation into flux, doesn't it? It's all, there's a weird parallel universe thing going on with EV prices, isn't there, compared to petrol and diesel prices?
That unknown, isn't it? And that's what's causing people to not know what to do.
We've only ever bought one brand new car as a business, and it was a Model 3. And we bought it in September 2019, wasn't it, Craig? And that was a Model 3 Performance. What was that, 53 at the time? 54,
I think.
54. So kind of prices went up, didn't they? And then came back down a little bit with them. But 4 years later, isn't it? So 4 years later, you can buy, or you'll be able to buy for $39,995. It's crazy. I think that'll. I mean, how are they selling? You guys get to see the new car sales list. I think I listened to you the other day. The Puma's like the number one selling car, isn't it? How's the Model Y in the top tens? Is it in there? Is it featuring?
I'd need to find our latest story. But the last year they were the best selling cars, weren't they?
In the UK, I think
the Model Y, unless I'm mistaken, is the best selling car in Europe.
I know in America it's best selling car. I think in America at the minute, but. I just think, you know, and they are good. I mean, let's be right. You've driven them as well. But then again, you've driven all the other EVs, and we never have. How do they match to the new EVs? What would you say?
Well, I mean, I think that the issue is here. You've got it's a bit like the Apple effect. You know, people want to have a Tesla, right? Like, and actually, don't really care what it's like. They just, a lot of the time, people don't test drive them first. They just order it because they're fans. And actually, there's a lot of electric cars out there that are rivals to the Model 3 and Y, and actually better. But you've got that Tesla effect, and it's people are desperate to own them. And especially when they keep cutting the prices, you can see why they keep selling so many of them.
The other thing is they're very good, like Apple. It's a good, they're both from Silicon Valley, aren't they? It's a good analogy, because with Apple, you buy an Apple thing, and I don't want to sound like an Apple advert from the mid-2000s, but it just sort of works, doesn't it? Everything talks to each other, and it's all really good. With a Tesla, everything, you know, the infotainment is fantastic. You go and plug it in at a Tesla charger, it just charges and bills you automatically. All that stuff is brilliant. And for some reason, you still don't get that from any other car manufacturer.
No.
You know, there's talk constantly of, like, when I went on the VW launch not that long ago, there was talk of, oh yeah, and if you plug this into an Ionity charger, then it'll automatically bill you and all this stuff, but it didn't work. It's all got to catch up with Tesla still. Yeah. So. Well, before we go on too much about Tesla, I'm going to have to ask you, who do you think is the winner? Who chose the best stories?
Craig, you pick. Decide.
I think the best overall was the flood.
Ooh, yes.
That's annoying. I thought I'd won with Bang Sir Ben.
No, you tried well, but before they say anything else, I'm going to accept the win. Thank you very much.
Well, all that's left for me to say is thank you to Jamie and Craig for judging today. It's been great to have you on, and congratulations again for bringing so much in for Ben. That is a fantastic achievement. And we didn't even talk about the reliability of your transport.
No, broke down 10 times. But again, I'd say thank you back to Car Dealer Magazine for making it happen in the first place. You know, as I say, that's And giving us so many fantastic trips. Craig and I have been on 6 or 7 together now, met some amazing people. And it started from you guys on that initial trip. So well done and high five. And get back on a trip, guys. Yeah. You know,
back slapping around. I like it.
Want to see you on the trip again, man. Really do. Yeah, John definitely. With his camera and, you know, and you with us. I remember seeing you in a Z3 driving across Milan in a, didn't you have ski goggles on us? I can't remember. You were in a...
We need to do it all over again.
I remember being in an MX-5.
That,
I remember,
that may have been it.
Yeah, I think Andy was in a Z3, which we covered in cling film, as I recall.
I was going to say, did you two sort of meet and get to know each other on Bangor St Ben? Or have I imagined that? Or you're in the local area anyway, aren't you?
No, we met through just social media. We prank called each other's respective businesses, and then we had a chili eating challenge. And then we had a burger eating challenge. And then we went on Bangers. And then TV show came in and we met. And then my business collapsed. And then me and Craig went for a steak at the pub over here. And then just, you know, it began. Car keys. I mean,
that's quite an interview process.
Yeah, I mean, that's how most execs actually decide to team up. Very similar trajectory. But I was hoping to take credit for it. But there we are.
And thank you as well to James for competing and annoying. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, swipe up now and vote on who you think won, which James pays a lot of attention to and I don't. If you want to check out the stories we mentioned today, you can click the links in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk where you'll find those and much more news besides. Thanks again. And until next time, goodbye.